Welcome to Your Career Podcast, the podcast that helps to ensure your career success. To start getting on track with your career, download my free career goals calendar from thecareersacademy.online. My goals calendar includes a SMART goals template and a weekly tasks sheet that will ensure step by step you get closer to reaching your career goals. So download my goals calendar today at thecareersacademy.online. Now on with the show.
If you hit a setback or a failure, what gets you through invariably is the fact that you've got a strong sense of self-belief and self-worth, self-esteem, and that enables you to deal with whatever's threatening you.
Welcome to Jane Jackson Careers, a podcast that takes your career to the next level. Here's your host, Jane Jackson, author of Amazon Careers bestseller, Navigating Career Crossroads.
Well, hello and welcome back to my careers podcast. This week's guest is Paul Lyons, who has managed his career through finance, recruitment, and now personal development in the form of mental toughness. He's had a fascinating career journey. After qualifying as a chartered accountant in his hometown of Manchester, England, Paul joined Michael Page International as a consultant and later emigrated to Sydney, where he became managing director for Michael Page in Australia and then Asia Pacific managing director based in Hong Kong. He left Michael Page to establish Ambition Recruitment with his colleague Nick Waterworth, and together they built the business as an international recruitment success story with offices throughout Australia, Asia, and in the UK. Now, 3 years ago, he left to establish Mental Toughness Partners, a network of coaches that assists individuals and organizations throughout Australia and Asia Pacific to develop their mental toughness, resilience, and well-being. As a CEO for 25 years in Australia and Asia, and with extensive business and coaching experience, he brings a wealth of career management expertise to the microphone. So let's find out Paul's entrepreneurial secrets to success. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, well, it's really good to have you on the show. Ever since I met you, I thought I've got to have this man on the show and tell us all about mental toughness. And also, because you had such an amazing career journey, I want to hear how you made all of these changes and managed all of your transitions, because it'll certainly help my clients who listen in as well. So how about, to kick us off, you tell us a little bit about your early days and your career aspirations, maybe when you were a little boy or a teenager?
Okay, well, absolutely. So it's a fairly boring start, Jen, I'm afraid. So pretty uneventful. I grew up in Manchester in England, mother, father, sister, dog. I, however, dreamt of perhaps being a hobo or an adventurer. I used to read stories and novels about places afar away. So I was quite excited about the prospects once I was old enough to really go on a world adventure, see the world, and I wasn't quite sure perhaps in what capacity. But anyway, with all of that as a background, I ended up being a chartered accountant and stayed in Manchester. So how boring can you be, having had such a a sort of exciting thoughts about the adventure? I just ended up being an accountant.
Oh, well, you make it sound so sad. But you know what? I love the image that we can conjure up when we hear the word hobo. I just think of you with a long stick and a big scarf tied up with all of your belongings, you know, at the end of the stick, walking around the world. But I guess that didn't happen. But you do jet around the world a lot. But what I want to know is, so what happened to the accounting degree career? Because you became a chartered accountant. So how does a chartered accountant become this international recruitment success?
Well, I was an accountant, but I probably wasn't a very good one. But the part of accounting I really enjoyed was going to talk to my clients and just understanding what their businesses were about and what their motivations were. And I found that was my strength. So I felt I had to have a career change. So I actually answered an advertisement, and in those days, a newspaper advertisement for a marketing career for a young accountant. And it was run by Michael Page, Partnership, as they were called then. And they were a small recruitment firm, probably about 50 people in a couple of offices in the UK, one of which was Manchester. So I answered this advertisement, and I met a young gentleman called Robert Walters, as it happened. And Rob was a manager with Michael Page at that time. And then a couple of years went off to set up his own business. And the rest is history, as we say. But I joined Michael Page. I liked the idea of the interaction with people. I could use my accounting background because we were recruiting accountants. So I joined them in Manchester, and a couple of years later was able to, I guess, fulfill my childhood dreams. And my director at the time, as he stood with me overlooking a car park in Manchester at three o'clock on a November afternoon when it was getting close to darkness, said, "Do you fancy going to Sydney?" And it didn't take me long to say yes. So a couple of months later, I was out in Sydney in the Michael Page office here, which at that stage only had probably about a dozen people and was the only office in the Asia part of the world for Michael Page. So that was the start of my journey, I guess.
Exciting. Tell me, you were standing in this car park. It was probably drizzling. It was Manchester, after all. I can just imagine you, but you're both with your big overcoats on and the umbrella, and it's like, would you like to go to Sydney? You must have thought for all of 2 seconds and said, yes, without a doubt, let me go to the land of the sunshine. So that must have been amazing. It must have been a bit daunting, though. How old were you at the time?
I was 30 at the time, so it was a long overdue adventure. It was the first time I've been to Australia, but as we know, it's a beautiful country, and it was a fantastic adventure. It was, as I say, 1987. So it was very different to what it is now, perhaps less sophisticated, a little slower in many ways, but a great introduction to an international sort of posting, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I coach so many people who go through career transition or any sort of transitions in their lives. And one way you move country is quite a big transition for many people who haven't done it before. How did you find the cultural difference for you, you know, working within recruitment when you moved from Manchester in the UK over to Australia? Did you find there was a big difference or not too much?
There was a difference. In those days, it was slightly different in lots of ways. But the nowadays, every other recruiter seems to be a Brit or Irish. Then there weren't too many of us. So it was different. And I found very quickly that Australia had a love-hate relationship with Britain. There was a great deal of fondness for the old country, but people really liked to have a go if they could. So for me, that was, you could take it positively or negatively, but I took it positively, and it was a kind of a real help to engage with people. Once they knew you were British, they would talk to you about people they knew in Britain, and you'd be able to engage in a conversation pretty easily. So it was really a soft landing, I have to say, Jane.
So after a number of years in Sydney, then you transitioned over to Hong Kong, which is a fantastic place. And I love it so much because close to my heart, that's my home, Hong Kong as well. And you must have just enjoyed that. Again, another cultural shock or a little bit of a period of adjustment when you moved over there, because that's so different, especially because obviously, you know, so many Cantonese speakers, I suppose at the time, now it's more Mandarin speakers and Cantonese speakers in Hong Kong. How did you make that change and how did you enjoy it?
Well, again, I was really lucky. So my reporting line as MD in Australia was to Mike Page in London, and then after him, a chap called Terry Benson, who's large in life, very charismatic. But I went for a long weekend to Hong Kong in 1993, and I just felt it was such an amazing place, and there were no recruitment companies at that stage.
Really? None?
Yeah. None. The big chartered accounting firms would do some recruitment, but the local paper at that stage, the South China Morning Post, would have regularly 100, 120 pages of display advertising. So I rang Mike and Terry and said, you know, I've got an idea. They said, come over and present. So I went over to talk to them about the fact that they should open in Hong Kong. And they said, we're really not interested. We're focused on Europe here. You do it if you want to do it. So I said, fine, we're happy to do that. So we started Hong Kong in 1994 as part of the Australia budget. And very quickly, as we thought we would, gained some traction. And really, that was the start of us building an Asia-Pacific network. Hong Kong was the first, Singapore was the second, and then on from there. And it just really meant that I should move to Hong Kong to manage the region, which is what I did with my wife and family in 1997, I think it was. Mm. Hong Kong, as you know, is just an amazing place. It seems to change its character every year, reinvent itself. It's 24/7. The smells, the sounds, everything's happening so quickly. So in that respect, it was incredibly different to Sydney. The pace was different. The people were different. Just really exciting. And it still remains my favorite city.
And the food. Don't forget all of the dim sums. And oh my God, that's the one thing that I miss the most about living in Hong Kong, is just being able to wander down. And I'm one who really loves cooked food stalls, you know, all the local stuff, going down to a little hole in the wall, and they have, you know, the lovely tea. And I love the tiger beer, and oh, going off to all of the wonderful outlying islands as well, where they have the best seafood. That could be a separate podcast, what it's like to live in Hong Kong. I might start another podcast, what it's like to live in and lots of different places. But back to you and recruitment. So it sounds like you really have an entrepreneurial mindset as well, you know, going off and under the umbrella of Michael Page, setting up your own practice there, really. So, and enjoying probably an awful lot of autonomy as you grew the business. And so what prompted this move from Michael Page to establish your own recruitment business ambition?
Yeah, it was probably a moment of madness, Jane, or several moments of madness. But Nick, whom I'd worked with for the previous 10 years, was director with Michael Page in Australia. And we decided to drive across the Nullarbor Desert from Melbourne to Perth to watch the rugby. We were watching the Wallabies play rugby. And in those 3 days, we crossed the Nullarbor, we just talked about not wanting to die wondering. You know, we both loved working for Michael Page. It was and is, I'm sure, a fantastic company to work for. And we had a lot of autonomy. We worked with a great team in the cities that we had offices in, but we just felt that we wanted to try it ourselves. So we managed to persuade ourselves in those 3 days that's what we wanted to do, and then talked to our respective wives, who were thankfully very supportive, and then decided to resign and start our own company, which we did a year later. Under the heading Ambition.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
Started in Sydney was the first office, and then Hong Kong actually was the second office a couple of years later. Mm-hmm. But that was Nick and I starting in a serviced office, and just again building the business through Australia and Asia and then into the UK. And we had some fantastic ups and downs, some great adventures, some highs and some real lows as well, with the GFC and one or two other things. So it's been a really, really great adventure. Learned a lot and enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, and just thinking of you driving across the Nullarbor Plain, who won the rugby, by the way?
I think the All Blacks always win. So the All Blacks, I think, beat Australia in Melbourne.
Oh,
and I think,
no.
I think Australia just about got home against South Africa and Perth.
You know, it just goes to show that you can't let two boys on their own driving across a Nullarbor plain without them cooking up something different, right?
So that's
very exciting. So congratulations on ambition and the success of how that business has grown as well. And now, before we move on to your next business, can you tell me, because so many listeners are job seekers, what's the best way to work with recruiters? Just some quick tips on working with recruiters.
So first of all, understand what recruiters are there for, and that's to help the client find the best person for the job. So I think recruiters are a really useful channel, but they're one channel. But if you're going to work with them, make yourself as user-friendly as you can. So give them good material to work with in terms of your profile, whether that's a traditional resume or it's a LinkedIn profile, but they need that information. And they also need you to understand who you are. So who you are, what you stand for, why, what your strengths are, what your proposition to a future employer would be, so that makes it easier for them to understand how they can best help you. So I think you need to do some groundwork first and help them to help you. So that's probably the key thing, is just realize they're one channel, only one channel, and there are quite a few, but you've got to do some legwork for them. Just market yourself in the right way to them, and keep in touch with them as well. So you'll find recruiters are notoriously bad at staying in contact with you. So find one that you like and trust, and then stay in contact with her or him.
Too many people tend to just leave it up to the recruiter to do everything. And I like this. Make yourself user friendly, because, you know, if it's easy to work with you, it's more likely that a recruiter will want to work with you and want to help you more as well. Isn't it? It's all to do with the relationship in the end.
Yeah, it is.
So valuable tips. Now, then off on your next adventure, you hobo.
That's right.
So what happened? Now, where were you when you decided on mental toughness? Were you in Australia, in Hong Kong, back in Manchester? Where were you?
I was back in Sydney, and I'd left Ambition by this time. But one of the things when I was with Ambition and with Page to a certain extent was that I realized the best people that I worked with as colleagues, but also clients and candidates, generally they may have been talented, they may have been intelligent, they may have been gregarious, but really that wasn't the magic ingredient to them being successful. Often it was something extra, and that something extra I couldn't quite define, but it was persistence or resilience or reliability. There was a bit of confidence in there. But I was really looking. I then went on a journey of discovery to try and find what the label was for this particular magic ingredient, this soft skill that made people successful. And so after that research, I happened upon a couple of professors in the UK that had developed a term called mental toughness, which was pretty prevalent in sport, but they had taken this term and developed a psychometric measure and a framework behind it, and called it mental toughness. And I really liked the definition, and I liked the fact that they were saying we can measure something which really is it's an attribute, a personality trait, or an attribute. And that for me as an accountant or an accounting background, I really like to measure things. So to be able to measure that was a big start. Whereas quite a few of the other frameworks that I looked at, so they would include things like growth mindset from a lady called Carol Dweck, grit from Angela Duckworth and others, they didn't have a measure attached. So this is why I kind of focused on mental toughness.
Yeah, I like this. I have a little blurb here about mental toughness partners, and it's such a good description. It says here, mental toughness is a personality trait that determines your ability to perform consistently under stress and pressure, and is closely related to qualities such as character, resilience, grit, and perseverance. Too few people have this. I think so many people say, oh, I'm not going to be successful, simply because they don't keep at it.
Right.
Something gets a little bit hard and it's, oh, it's all too hard, and then they give up. But it's those who go again and again and again and not take no for an answer. And I think also, if you've got a strong enough desire, then you will overcome all of those challenges as well. And I think that desire helps you to build upon your resilience and mental toughness. Would you say that's right?
Absolutely right, Jane. Yeah. I read something by J.K. Rowling, who obviously quite famous as an author, but she said quite rightly that failure is a part of success. Mm. And I in my mind, up until a few years ago, I was thinking that failure was opposite to success. But the way she framed it was quite rightly that it's just part of success. You overcome setbacks and failures, and it's that overcoming those setbacks and failures that you develop, you experience. You know, things go wrong and you kind of work out why they went wrong, and you get back up, dust yourself down, and off you go again. And I think that's the secret to many people's success, as you say.
Yeah, and I think we all get so inspired by other people's success stories, especially if they've gone through really challenging times, because mm-hmm. it inspires us to go on when we're going through the tough stuff as well. Because the tough stuff, honestly, it's going to happen. No matter how good things are going to get worse. No matter how bad things are going to get better eventually, aren't they?
I think that's right. And also, I think the perspective, if nothing bad happens to you, you can't appreciate the good things. Mm. I think it's having those highs and lows that gives you a real depth to your life and to your work and your career, because the bad times really highlight how good the good times can be. But funnily enough, as I've got older, I've realized that I don't celebrate successes to the extreme, but I also don't over dramatize the setbacks or failures. It's just one point in time, and it's a challenge to get round, but we'll definitely get round them. Mm-hmm. So I think you just develop a different perspective if you have that point of view that, you know, failures and setbacks will happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I always like that saying, and there is that book as well, The Obstacle is the Way. Whenever there is a challenge, if the challenge is big enough and you need to get around it, you will find a way around it, and probably an even better way than you originally had imagined.
Yeah.
Definitely. Now I've listened to a number of your talks now, and I always find them really inspiring. So that's good. I can listen to you all day. Now there's a framework that you talk about in mental toughness training, and you've got the four C's: control, commitment, challenge, and confidence. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, they're the framework to what mental toughness is all about. And you talked about a definition from Professor Peter Clough around stress and managing stress. And another definition that's related that he put together was that mental toughness is a combination of resilience and confidence. And the resilience and confidence are made up of two C's each. So just going through the C's. So control represents self-esteem and the ability to manage your emotions. And commitment is around your focus and goal setting, your reliability. So those two things really represent resilience, because if you hit a setback or a failure, what gets you through invariably is the fact that you've got a strong sense of self-belief and self-worth, self-esteem, and that enables you to deal with whatever's threatening you. And also to sort of regain momentum, you just need to start to set yourself some goals, some small ones perhaps, and start to complete on those goals and start to get some momentum. So those two things are really important when it comes to resilience, but they're also important in terms of your day-to-day routines as well. So control is self-esteem, and managing your emotions, and that's so feeling comfortable or not feeling threatened by, you know, people who've got a larger than life personality or who can be difficult people. And then commitment, which is around reliability, goal setting, focus. So those two are really, really handy traits to have, but they also represent resilience. So if you do nothing else, those two are important. Mm-hmm. And then the other two, which we call challenge and confidence, they represent the confidence part of that particular definition. And challenge really is around drive, motivation, a desire for personal growth. And people who are high on challenge generally are pretty risk orientated. They like change. They like new situations. So those are the people who probably I would be high on challenge, because I get bored easily. I like new places to go to. So challenge is an important one. It enables people to take advantage of opportunities that they see. And then the fourth one is confidence. So that's really around our self-belief to undertake a task or a situation to the best of our ability, and also our ability to manage our relationships with other people. So those are the four, and I just think they're really useful traits to have to get yourself through a working week with some structure and with a framework. And if you're in a spot of bother, just going back to those four C's will often help you out of the challenges you've got and get you moving again.
Mm. Just listening to that, I mean, typically I think successful entrepreneurs have definitely got the four C's, because there's always challenges. However, even as an employee or working within any large or smaller organization, in order to be successful, you have to have the four C's as well, because change is the one constant, isn't it? And if you can't roll with the punches and go with the flow and accept organizational change or manage change well, then that's going to really affect your self-confidence and also ability to be able to cope. So people will need to measure their mental toughness, won't they? And I know that you have this assessment. It's called MTQ, which I assume, correct me if I'm wrong, mental toughness quotient. Is that what it is?
It is quotient or questionnaire.
Questionnaire. That's really... Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. And 48, does that mean there are 48 questions?
It does, Jane.
Oh, I'm so clever.
You cracked the secret code.
Oh, well, I love decoding things, but that was quite a simple one. All right, so tell us about MTQ48.
So it's a fairly simple psychometric, in terms of it's only 48 questions. It's online, takes about 10 minutes, but it's scientifically really valid and reliable. It's been endorsed by British Psychological Society, US Department of Labor, used by lots of organizations, thousands of organizations and individuals around the world, particularly in the UK, which is where it originated. And it measures each one of the four C's and mental toughness overall on a scale of 1 to 10. So it does mean that you can see where you are on a scale of 1 to 10, and each score then also contributes to a report that tells you where you're strong or where you've got some development points in terms of developing your mental toughness. So it's a really useful questionnaire, because it gives you a quick snapshot of your mindset and the way you're thinking and feeling. And the way you think and feel is then only really a short journey to the way you act and behave. Mm-hmm. So it's a really sort of good insight to where you're at. So I think it's a fantastic tool for people to use to get a, if you like, a starting point for their personal development.
Mm-hmm. And so how does Mental Toughness Partners work with the results of the MTQ 48? What happens? So I'm assuming you're going into an organization, or individuals come to you and they want to take this assessment. And what happens once they've done it?
Yeah, so then then the whole range of situations, but then we would help the individual go from sort of here to where they want to get to. And that often goes through a journey of reflection and conversation around sort of where they're at the moment, where they want to get to, and what the results mean. And perhaps there are areas that they want to improve upon in their own personal makeup. And we would help them do that with fairly traditional interventions, such as positive thinking and visualization, goal setting. There's a whole range of techniques that we can use. But essentially the thing is that most people have to change a habit or a routine. So they have to change the way they think and really work hard to change that thought process that they've got at the moment, which is creating an outcome that they don't want. So we've got to work with them to change that habit or routine, which might take 2 months or 3 months or 4 months to kind of change the hard wiring that they've got internally, and hopefully therefore a different outcome. So it's the mental side of getting, if you think about getting physically fit, you have to go through a series of routines. Getting mentally fit is exactly the same.
And so do you tend to work with individuals, or do you do it as group workshops or group work?
So it's both, really, Jane. So in areas such as, let's just say, leadership coaching or outplacement, it may well be with individuals. But if it's part of an L&D program or a change program or culture program, it's often with organizations. You know, they want change across a cohort or a group. So it really does depend.
And so now I know you're currently sitting in Kuala Lumpur, KL, in Malaysia. I'm sitting here in Sydney. I saw you in Sydney last weekend, and you were in Japan, I think, a week or so before then. And you're traveling all over the world. So mental toughness, this is really all across Asia Pacific. Is that right?
Most of our coaches are based in Australia, but we're doing work in Hong Kong, Singapore, Kuala Lumpur as well. So we've got a growing network of organizations and also coaches as well. So it's certainly very topical. There's lots of change going on, both technological change and cultural change. So it's gaining pace, which we're delighted to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think mental toughness is such an important thing in today's day and age, because there's so much organizational change and a lot of stress for many, many people.
That's right.
Yeah, so if people want to get in touch with you, Paul, where can they find you?
www.mentaltoughness.partners, paullyons.com.
Okay, perfect. What I'll do is I'll put this on my show notes as well, so people will be able to go to janejacksoncoach.com/podcast, and all of the contact details for you and Mental Toughness Dot Partners will be on the show notes. And I believe you have a special offer. May I mention the special offer, Paul?
You may. Please do.
So what Paul is offering to listeners is 2 free Measure Your Mental Toughness packages, and that will be given to the first 2 people who email me, jane@janejacksoncoach.com. And what this is the MTQ48 Psych Measure Plus Personal Mental Toughness Debrief with Paul himself. So I think that's a very valuable package which you can get. So what you need to do is to email me, jane@janejacksoncoach.com, and in the subject heading, just put mental toughness, and the first 2 people who email will get to win it.
That's a pleasure, Jane. I really appreciate the time today. It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, no, so interesting to find out all about mental toughness and also your career journey, because from Manchester through to Sydney and then Hong Kong, and now knowing that you're traveling all over the world with Mental Toughness Partners and running this business, it's been quite a journey. So you did fulfill your hobo desires from the early days.
I did, eventually.
Well, I'd love to have you on the show again. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and I wish you all the best, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Jane. Look forward to it.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook download and free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/Jane Jackson Careers. There are over 180,000 book titles to choose, so give it a go and get your free audiobook today from audibletrial.com/Jane Jackson Careers.
You've been listening to Jane Jackson Careers. Sign up to receive regular career advice at janejacksoncoach.com.
If
you enjoyed this episode of Your Career Podcast, I invite you to check out my career success program at thecareersacademy.online. The Career Success Program is the original program that uniquely provides 24/7 on-demand career support and fortnightly live career coaching sessions to keep you on track to reach your career goals. It is the essential resource for anyone who wants to manage their career effectively, make a career change, and land the job they'll love. Whether you're in exploration mode or seeking a new career direction and need help to make it a reality, the Career Success Program is for you. Not only do you get access to my step-by-step roadmap to navigate your career crossroads, my extensive training library and exclusive members-only discounts and tools, you'll also become part of my supportive community of professionals who will help you with feedback, encouragement, and advice. All this and more makes the Career Success Program the number one place to be for anyone looking to start, manage, and grow their career. Check it out and join me at thecareersacademy.online.